Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Jay Farrow to the broadcast. Jay is the CIO of the American Cancer Society. During his time in that role, he's led a transformation of the IT function, which has included consolidating the operation and rendering it much more efficient and innovative in the process. Prior to his time at the American Cancer Society, Jay was the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer for AdCare Health Systems, where he was responsible for the people, strategy, and operations of the nationwide IT group. Prior to AdCare, Jay was VP and CIO for Chartis Aerospace, formerly AIG Aviation, a leading global aerospace insurer. In addition to his role as AVP of IT with AIG Personal Lines, he was selected as CFO for Operations and Systems in 2006 and led multiple global IT finance and governance standards initiatives that resulted in millions of dollars in savings for the organization. In recognition of his accomplishments, Jay was selected as Georgia CIO of the Year in 2011. He's also the chairman of the board of directors for TechBridge, an Atlanta-based nonprofit organization which helps other nonprofits use technology to improve their capability to serve the community. Jay's also on the alumni board of directors for the Terry College of Business at the University of Georgia and the current chairman of the Georgia CIO Leadership Association. Jay has a bachelor's degree in political science from the University of Georgia and an MBA from the Terry College of Business at the University of Georgia. I recently spoke with Jay in his office in Atlanta, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as Jay described the passion his team and colleagues exude for the cause of the American Cancer Society. Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed Jay's efforts to consolidate the infrastructure at ACS. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed the methods he used to get up to speed in his current role, and as well as a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Jay Farrow, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be here.
Great. Well, Jay, I've been looking forward to this conversation. You and I have gotten to know each other over the past couple of years, and I've been excited to learn more about the work that you've been doing at the American Cancer Society. And I wonder if you could take a moment to better introduce, you know, your role within the organization, as well as how the American Cancer Society leverages technology.
You know, it's a real privilege to be at the American Cancer Society. You know, interestingly, we're celebrating our 100th year. This year in 2013, which is very exciting. And what people may not understand or may not recognize right away is that technology plays a huge role in what we do day to day in the battle against cancer. I mean, clearly, you know, people think about the American Cancer Society, they think about research. And so technology plays a huge role there in the way that we aggregate data, the way that we analyze data. So obviously, IT plays a huge role in analytics and business intelligence. In all of those technologies. But from a fundraising perspective, from a mobility perspective, there's really not a technology out there that we're not leveraging in some way, shape, or form. Part of it has to do with our scale. I mean, the American Cancer Society has 900 local offices around the world, and we're spread out everywhere. We're in the communities where people are. It's part of our secret sauce. And so being able to tie our over 3 million volunteers to our staff, to our resources, takes a tremendous amount of technology. So putting, you know, powerful mobile solutions in the hands of our volunteers and our remote staff, giving them access to the information they need on their terms, you know, whether it's being able to receive information about their diagnosis, to do some research on cancer, to connect with local resources, to connect with volunteers who perhaps can give them a ride to radiation or chemotherapy or their treatment options. And the list keeps on going. So we provide all the solutions that make all of those things possible.
I know one of the really interesting things about working at ACS as compared to the average IT job is, well, speaking first of the average IT job, there's at times a difficulty
in having the IT leader connect the dots between the mission or the objectives of the broader organization and what it is that IT does. And obviously, you've begun to talk about the way in which IT and technology fits into the overall value proposition of the organization. But I also know that you, like so many at ACS, have been personally impacted by the disease, and that connection point is all the more poignant for someone like yourself, like others in the organization. And I wonder, is having worked in a variety of different settings, for-profit and not-for-profit, do you find actually that it's easier to connect the dots between the overall mission of the organization and what IT is doing as a result of that?
I think it is. I think even in a privately held or publicly traded company, you can do a good job of doing that. Certainly, there's far more of an emotional connection to what we do for the average employee. People can get their head around, trying to find cures and help people fight back and stay well and get well when you're battling cancer. So it's a fairly, quote, easy sell. You touched on being personally touched, and what brought me here was, I lost my wife, Priscilla, who is my college sweetheart, to cancer in 2007. And coming here was partly, obviously, a career decision, but it was an emotional decision as well, where, as a CIO, having been a CIO, a chance to do it for our organization is a real privilege. But to your question, I think the concept of saving lives, the concept of getting well and finding cures is fairly straightforward. Where we struggled in IT in the past maybe was drawing that line for how IT is enabling those. And over the last 18 months, I think we've done a real good job in demonstrating to our IT people just how what they do on a day-to-day basis in every role impacts how effective we are at our mission in delivering our services and fundraising, et cetera. So I think people can feel real good, at least internally with IT and externally if they're helping. The IT people at ACS feel very, very good about what they do day to day.
And I know actually from our earliest conversations, one of the things that I find so compelling is the way in which value is measured. And no doubt IT still has the normal kind of uptime and, the on time, on budget, on scope types of metrics that it keeps. But I know that you also are deeply connected and ensure that your IT department is deeply connected to the whole notion of helping people celebrate more birthdays, which I think is such a nice way to frame things. I wonder if you could talk a moment about that sort of key metric that drives the entire organization.
Yeah, you know what? You hit it right on the head. And so we're working to create a world with less cancer and more birthdays. So if you're familiar with ACS, you understand that by helping people celebrate birthdays, you're helping save lives. And one of the many ways, as you state, that we measure our success in the number of birthdays that we help people celebrate every year or every day. Today, over 400 people are celebrating a birthday every single day because of the work that the American Cancer Society has done over the years. We want that to be 1,000 and eventually 10,000 a day. We want to eliminate cancer as a world health problem. Now, specific to IT, we do measure things that way. We can translate what we do dollar-wise to perhaps a visit in one of our Hope Lodges and say, the amount of money that we're spending on Project X, is it worth this investment? Because what we're saying is, by doing this, we're going to get a great return. So people always ask the questions, do you still look at things as ROI? And the business principles still apply, but we take it an extra layer. Are we going to enable more birthdays to be celebrated? Are we going to be able to provide more nights at a Hope Lodge? Are we going to be able to take more calls in our call center because of this? Are we going to help people get a ride to cancer treatment because of this? So a far more compelling tie than perhaps just the normal metrics, which of course we use as well.
We've talked now a couple of times about the fact that you are not exclusively a non-for-profit CIO. You spent time, for instance, at a division of AIG most recently prior to joining ACS, and had actually worked in several different settings in the for-profit world. I wonder if you could take a moment, compare and contrast the experiences past versus your current role, and the commonalities and differences between the for-profit world and at least this example of the non-for-profit.
Yeah, it's far more similar than different. I think the core business principles still apply. And I think, and I will tell you this, Peter, that when before joining, my assumption incorrectly was that you go to work for a large nonprofit, it would be very slow moving and it would be very bureaucratic and very cumbersome and almost backwards. That is not the case. You have a group of very passionate people that are very dedicated. You have the same pros and cons as you would with another large organization. You know, with an organization our size, you are going to have a certain level of bureaucracy. But what you have ample amounts of is passion. There's very few people in the organization that don't understand what we're trying to accomplish. And that can't always be said in perhaps the insurance industry or the financial services industry or the whatever. You may not understand every single day how what you're doing impacts, quote, your product. So there, it's far more similar than perhaps you'd understand. I mean, the principles still apply. But what's exciting is, you know, the outcomes are very, very different. I will say that people generally in the nonprofit space tend to be a little nicer than having worked in the financial services industry. I had a great time at AIG, and I'm still very, very proud of my colleagues at AIG. I speak to them quite often, and I have nothing but fond things to say about my time there. You know, moving to a nonprofit, it's a little softer on the edges than perhaps in the financial services industry. And have come in, I had to learn a little more gentle touch, but I picked that up very, very quickly.
I'm not surprised, as empathetic as you clearly are, Jay. Well, I wanted to talk a bit about the transformation that you've led in IT. As you pointed out, your own perhaps bias to the nonprofit world was that there would be more bureaucracy and more red tape perhaps in the way of getting good decisions made. And I know actually in the early stages of your time at ACS, you went about making sure that where, in fact, any of those issues might be in place, that you were really empowered and driven personally to make sure that they were peeled away in consolidating the way in which IT does things and reducing the footprint for IT. Can you talk a bit about some of those early months, what you found when you joined ACS and its IT department, and some of the steps you undertook to do the kinds of things that I'm referring to?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. When I first joined, the American Cancer Society, just to paint a little bit of the background, is going through a once-in-a-lifetime transformation. Where we were historically a very federated organization, as is quite common in the nonprofit space and even for-profit space, we are now one unified organization. But we still have some of the vestiges, of course, of the federated nature of the way we used to be, meaning that we had different IT systems, we had a large number of disparate technologies that perhaps were loosely cobbled together, almost an accidental architecture that at the time served us very, very well. ACS became and has been a very successful organization. But we recognized going into our next 100 years that there's a better way, that we could be more efficient, that we had to be more lean and mean, and that we had to be more unified in our approach against the battle against cancer. And that's all well and good, but what does that actually mean? That means taking a hard look at all of our processes. Instead of 12 or 13 different SDLCs, we need one. Instead of, multiple project management life cycles, we need one. Instead of one, and the list goes on and on and on. Multiple technologies, multiple telecom strategies, multiple application portfolios, all being rationalized very, very, very quickly to one unified IT organization. When I joined, combined, but we were not unified. Now we're one global IT organization with one set of marching orders, one technology stack, working very hard toward that in many ways, in many areas, and we've made significant progress. I think people inherently here, when I joined, understood that there was a better way and that we had to kind of armor up and get ready to take the battle up a notch. I think we recognized that one unified way of doing business better prepared us for the battle against cancer. It made better use of our resources. It made better use of our donor dollars, which we're very, very respectful of. If I only have to support one application for fundraising versus 13 or something like that. A lot of, in IT terms, application rationalization, a lot of architecture and infrastructure rationalization, database rationalization, a lot of upgrades, a lot of opportunities around security, et cetera. But what we're finding is that we're coming out a much leaner, but much more powerful. We're doing more for less than we ever thought possible. So even though we're going to end up spending probably less, apples to apples, the return on that investment is probably going to be anywhere between conservatively 5-6-fold, simply through the efficiencies that we're getting on the various technology improvements, but also the reskilling of resources, the realignment of resources to better deliver against our strategy.
That's really great. And now with some highway in your rearview mirror in terms of proceeding down the path towards this more common way of doing things, the proof is there and the metrics are there that you've already spoken of. On day one, I have to imagine at least portions of that were speculation. And part of the job, needless to say, was influencing people who perhaps were used to doing things more autonomously than you were now suggesting that they do. And I wonder, how did you exert influence in such a way as to help them see this new reality and the benefits they would garner from it?
Well, I tried begging at first, and that didn't go over well. But, it's very similar in any organization. I mean, obviously, when you have a very passionate executive group that is used to a fair amount of autonomy, they're going to be somewhat circumspect of your motivations or your ability to deliver against their requirements and their strategic needs. It took a leap of faith. And I think the best way, you know, in your first quarter as a CIO, you better be prepared to walk in and build relationships. And the first way you're going to do that is by zipping your mouth and listening and really digesting what's going on and understanding, seeking to understand the business processes and how work and how things really happen in an organization. You have to be self-aware enough to pick up the political nuances. You have to learn how to live to fight another day. And I tell my staff all the time, everything doesn't have to be a holy war. We're not black and white on every single thing. We don't walk in with, you know, the PMI handbook and say, we are going to implement every single aspect of this and thou shalt, you know, learn to kind of take your victories, walk away, and then fight that battle another day. And battle's not even the right metaphor, but so right away, it was all about listening and learning and then making people feel, because you were legitimately doing it, that you had their best interests in mind and that you were on their side and that you were as dedicated to saving lives as they were. That was the first thing.
One of the things that I think was so intriguing, Jay, as I look back through your past experiences, you were a CIO relatively young. You were still a 30-something, in fact, when you first climbed into the CIO chair, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
And you have some common background to what we see, at least among high performers who reach the apex of IT relatively early. You have a technical background, but also have an MBA. You have a variety of experiences. With each stop, you have demonstrated accomplishment and received promotion as a result of that. And I wonder if there are lessons from your background for those among our listeners who are aspiring CIOs. Can you think back to the past about some of the decisions you made? Maybe it's some of the very things I've talked about, but maybe others as well, that put you on that path relatively early to becoming a chief information officer?
Absolutely. I can think of a couple of things that spring to mind. You touched on one of them, and certainly the MBA is not a magical ticket that suddenly makes you worthy of becoming a CIO, but I think what it speaks to, at least in my case, was a certain level of business acumen where you understand how organizations make money or deliver their services. Because essentially what you're doing as a CIO is you're enabling all of that. And you're not an order taker. You're not sitting around waiting to, quote, digitize everything. The days of boxes and wires CIOs are, if they're not gone, they're certainly, you know, on their last legs. CIOs are uniquely positioned to understand the way businesses do what they do. From a business process perspective, there is no other position in the organization that sees across and through everything as much as a good CIO can. So I learned very quickly that being effective or becoming a CIO is about business acumen. It's about how to articulate business needs and apply a technology strategy to them in a very non-threatening kind of way. It's about emotional intelligence. It's never about the technology. ACS is not a technology organization. You know, we are a community-based cancer-fighting nonprofit.
Right.
We're not Google. However, that doesn't in any way, shape, or form minimize how important technology is in the battle against cancer. I say that only to recognize that we are not doing IT for IT's sake. We have a higher purpose. And so I think the quicker that a CIO or an aspiring CIO truly understands that, the better. And then one other thing that springs to mind is be willing to pay your dues. I think a lot of, and I say that being a somewhat young guy, but I think a lot of aspiring CIOs, and I think I made this mistake earlier in my career where maybe you felt that you could do it on raw gusto or maybe raw energy alone, and you have to be able to get a little gray in your hair. You have to go in and prove what you're capable of delivering. And it's paid off. I had someone, one of our Medal of Honor winners here at the American Cancer Society, had a great way to describe her calling in her career. And she's made terrific breakthroughs in cervical cancer, in community health area. And she said, some people have a job. Some people have a career. Very few people have a crusade. That really resonated with me because I've treated my entire career as if it's a crusade. Whatever I do with that type of zeal. And doing it at the American Cancer Society is very easy. I don't treat it like a job or a career. I treat it like a crusade. And I think what you find is the truly exemplary CIOs, and believe me, I'm not throwing myself in that category just yet. Maybe someday, but I think CEOs, CFOs, CMOs, whatever it is, are the ones who have that unbridled passion for what they do.
Frankly, hearing you speak, Jay, there's an additional quality that certainly comes out rather dramatically, and that is your ability to communicate, and which is not necessarily always the primary bailiwick or the noticeable strength of the CIO, at least historically. And I like the way in which you frame everything or and advise the others frame what IT does in the terms of the business rather than mm-hmm. the more esoteric terms of information technology. Clearly another sort of path to success that you learned early and have exploited ever since. I wonder, can you take a moment to tell us a bit about your priorities as the IT leader at ACS for the foreseeable future?
Short term, one of the things that when I first joined ACS, it was very, very clear that, and we talked a little bit about it earlier, that you know, learning and listening and understanding what's going on was key. Clearly, right after that, you know, when you're still new within an organization, the focus then switches to quick wins and governance. You know, you put in and again, you don't try to boil the ocean right away. You put in a framework very, very quickly. Understand where the burning fires are and try to put those out naturally. Then put in a program of quick wins and understanding that I may want to sail to Tahiti or Bora Bora as an organization. I may say this is my end goal, to be on a beach somewhere, you know, drinking a fruity drink and enjoying some, you know, Caribbean music or whatever. If my boat never makes it out of the harbor because there's so many holes in it, it's kind of a moot point. And I think a lot of people, when it comes to strategic planning, do that very thing. They think about a 3 to 5 year plan, but they don't see the immediate things right in front of their face. So it was very, very clear that we had a lot of quick win opportunities right out of the gate. But the good thing about quick win opportunities is that they are steps along the way to a larger strategic goal. So I told someone earlier today, I said, look, not everything in IT has to be a Hail Mary. Hail Marys very rarely work.
Right.
They're beautiful when they do. I promise. The big rainbow arcing pass and the dude's wide open in the end zone. It fools everybody. But you know what? 5 yards every single time may not be as dramatic or as pretty, but when you score, it counts the same. And often in IT, we have to be able to do that. So, but back to your question is, we still have some kind of internal realignment or rather rationalization things to finish up, but I'm very excited about some new collaboration projects that we have this year. We're rolling out Office 365 across the nation, so very, very excited about that. We're moving off of Lotus Notes. You know, we'll be taking a hard look at our CRM environment, as you would imagine, having over 3 million volunteers and constituents and many more donors and people who interact. Constituent management or CRM, customer relationship management, is a very important part of what we do. So providing a more seamless experience for our folks to engage the way they need to. Taking a harder look at mobility. Right now we're very, very good in certain areas in a mobile experience, whether it's with Relay for Life, which is our largest fundraiser, or making strides against breast cancer, et cetera. But we have room for improvement. There are better tools that we can be providing our staff and our volunteers. So getting more mature in the mobile space. And then lastly, I think probably, the one I would want to mention is all around data management and business intelligence. First of all, getting our arms around just the scads and scads of data that we have and making sure we're making the best use of it. We're very good at it, but I think we can get better. And then looking at more advanced technologies, obviously the quote big data revolution, and understanding how that applies in the battle against cancer. Some organizations are already leveraging that. We are too, to a certain extent, but I think, again, there's some opportunities to take our maturity up a level.
How do you think about the investigation of business and technology trends and then apply them back to your organization? Is there a role in your organization that is sort of like an R&D role? Is this something that you personally take responsibility for? As you look around and see how creative technologists and CIOs are leveraging the kinds of things that you've mentioned, from mobile to social to data analytics, what is your method or your process to harness the opportunity for each of those and then to translate them into ACS's environment?
First of all, we don't have a formalized R&D function, so it's basically baked into most of our more standard functions. That said, we do hold people, I do hold my executives accountable to a certain amount of their time, taking a look at innovation in the art of the possible. We rolled out rolling out a new innovation process nationwide, not even just with IT, but beyond IT, for idea capture, ideation, all of those things, whether it's crowdsourcing. So we want to make sure that we're getting the ideas bubbling up through all levels of the organization, and even beyond that, at some point in the near future, engaging our volunteers and our constituents as well in that whole ideation process. Now, specific to IT, we will probably never be on the bleeding edge, but we are very proud of the fact that we're very, very fast followers. So leveraging the very powerful CIO network here in Atlanta, leveraging the CIO network nationwide, partnering with other organizations, understanding how they're leveraging technologies, learning very quickly, and then prototyping and bringing them up. Bottom line is, one of my mantras, and Peter, I may have even gotten it from you, but think big, start small, scale fast. I don't know where I got it, but bottom line is that we do have a lot of big ideas. We are a large nonprofit, but most organizations, even organizations our size, can't afford to go boil the ocean. So we start small, prove it out, and then scale very, very quickly.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that overview. Well, to our listeners, for those of you who feel compelled, as I certainly have been, I hope that you'll give cancer.org a viewing and perhaps consider the possibility of giving to what is clearly a very important mission. And I think that you make such a compelling case, Jay, as to the role that IT is playing in making sure that the constituents that you have, the beneficiaries of the work that you're doing, are in fact living better lives, celebrating more birthdays. And thank you so much for taking this time and walking us through your own path, and as well as the many great things that you're doing at ACS.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a great pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the time very much.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Many of Red Hat's global customers are experiencing the explosive growth of big, semi-structured, or unstructured data. Are you? Visit redhat.com/liberate to learn how Red Hat is helping liberate their customers' data with innovative open-source software solutions for scale-out network-attached storage. Just listen to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.